Hi, my name is Tara Kachaturoff, and I'm the host of Michigan Entrepreneur, where we feature businesses from startup to stellar. Today, we have as our special guest, Jeremy Cuevas, who is a conductor. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tara. So happy to be here.
Hey, I'm really excited to have you here because this is the most unique situation I've had in all the years I've been doing this, 19 years. I finally got a conductor on here. And I'm really excited to talk to you about this because you are building an entire business around the love, something you love very dearly, which is music. Before we jump into that, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and about your background? Like, what did you study in school and what led you to actually getting into this business?
Yeah, absolutely. I developed a love of music pretty early. I was played in some rock bands, had a lot of fun in high school. And then in college, I kind of realized that, you know, classical music was really a big passion of mine. There was such a deep well, there was so much to study, and there was always more to learn. So I started taking music really seriously. I studied composition, actually. I wrote a lot of music for my undergrad. And then about halfway through there, I played in an orchestra where I kind of discovered what a conductor does. I was playing with a great, great, great conductor named Erin Freeman. She's based in Virginia. And she just kind of helped me see what it is that conductors do more than I'd ever seen before. She's very creative. Her leadership was something I'd never encountered before, and her musicality, the things that she asked us to do. And I caught the bug. I went and I bought all the conducting books I could. I signed up for all the graduate conducting classes while I was still an undergrad. And then I graduated with my composition degree. I moved out to Colorado to study conducting. And that's what I've been doing since. I absolutely love it. It was a little tough during COVID for a couple of years. Nothing was really happening, as we all know, but it's a really great career. It's a lot of hard work, a lot of driving, but I really love it.
Hey, so some questions I have about your early days. When you were in a rock band, what instrument were you playing?
I was playing guitar in the main one. Mm-hmm. But violin is my main instrument. You can't see it, but it's just off camera back here by the piano.
Okay. Violin so was I was playing. So you played violin when you were in symphony, right? So violin.
Yeah. Yeah. Since fifth grade, I started in public school and then just kept going. Yeah. Guitar and a little bit of drums. I sang for a little bit, but a lot of rock band stuff in high school.
That's really interesting. So was there anything, what was it? Do you know what it was specifically about conducting that was so compelling to you at the time? I mean, I know, working under somebody, but were there other things that were happening within you that you just felt? Because conducting is very different than being in the orchestra. And I mean, you had both the kind of experiences, but conducting is stepping up to another level of play within yourself and within the whole orchestra. Mm-hmm. It's a leadership position in a different way.
Yeah, I think I was already feeling that leadership bug as a composer. You know, I would sit alone and write music, but then a lot of that work is working with musicians and kind of telling them how to play and what to play. I mean, that's literally what you're doing. So I was already doing a little bit of conductor things while I was running rehearsals for my own music. So the bug was already there. And then there was a very specific moment. We were playing Romeo and Juliet by Prokofiev. And there's a part of that a lot of people will actually recognize if they go look it up. But there was a section that had to be so very quiet. And we just couldn't get it quiet enough. And I was playing violin, and we pluck our strings. So we usually pluck like this. And it was still too loud. It was this gentle moment in the Juliet movement. And Erin asked us, she's like, no, the plucking is still too loud. Try this. And instead of actually plucking and pulling, she said, just put your finger on and pick it up. Put your finger on and pick it up. Yeah. And when we all did that together, you know, when all 30 of the violins did that together, it was like, you know, it was like a snap. It like the skies opened up, and we all of us knew at the exact same time that that was what we were looking for. And so it was this moment of community. It was this moment of creativity. It was this moment of like achieving something that without her leadership, if we were just going at it, if she wasn't willing to try something like that with us, we wouldn't have never discovered it. So it was all these things kind of coming together at a perfect time in my life.
That's fascinating. That's a story I won't forget anytime soon. You know what's really neat is that, I mean, being a conductor, I mean, from my vantage point of being somebody who would be in the audience, is that it's not just conducting. I mean, you're all working together. Everybody's a leader, really, because it's just the synergistic thing. I mean, you're not just doing things at them, you're doing things together, because that's how it works. Music is all flow. There is no one way. So yeah, that's so interesting. That's so interesting. And how is it that now there's that other piece of this, is that you come from rock band beginnings, let's just say, but what was it about you wanting to, well, I mean, you don't really conduct a rock band, so you had to go the classical route, right, so to speak. Although there are pops orchestras, and you're involved with that as well, I guess, Detroit or Denver Rock. But what is it about classical music that you love so much? What is it that it brings alive for you?
Classical music was, in a way, it was so much more complex than anything else that I could find. Again, I was playing a performance with an orchestra that was above my kind of level of skill. So I got this lucky break where I got to go play with this orchestra. And I got to spend weeks and weeks watching them put together a piece. This was when I was in high school. Scheherazade, and
Oh,
the
wow.
complexity of it, the layers of it, just sitting back and watching musicians that were so much better than me do what they did best while I was in high school. That's when I caught the classical music bug. We hear classical music all over the place in commercials and on the radio and on the radio maybe less unless you're listening to the classical stations, but commercials and TV and movies. Star Wars is a symphonic score. So we hear it all the time, but this was the first time that I actually got to sit and listen and see what the conductor was, again, see what the conductor was doing, see the details that they were bringing out, and really appreciate the complexity of the music. And not just for the sake of complexity, but the way that all these things came together to make one unified whole. That really struck me at that time. And that's when I started getting the composing bug. That's when I started getting the classical music bug, because it was an experience that I couldn't get anywhere else, of teamwork coming to do something that wouldn't exist without that teamwork that was so complex, all these parts had to fit together.
And I think what's so fascinating about music is it's just this, it's an auditory experience. I mean, yes, you see the symphony, but you're creating something in a whole nother sense. I mean, it's just, to me, there's just something about sound, and just, I don't know, it's very exciting to me. And there's also something about classical music, is that you can play pieces that were written hundreds of years ago and listen to those same things that they heard back then. It's almost like the only time we can really experience the past in the present. You know, it's kind of, I don't know, I
Yeah.
think about things like
And
that.
if it's a good performance, it's so exciting. I mean,
Is. It's,
if you
there's the
listen to one of
senses.
those big pieces and you just sit in the hall, again, it's also one of the only places where we just sit and listen. Like you said, you can watch the orchestra, but there's not usually visuals. There's nothing else like that in our life where we sit for 2 hours and just experience something that's just auditory. And it's so exciting. Classical music is not boring and sleepy. If you go listen, it's fast, it's exciting. There's fire and there's passion in it. These were human beings writing music about the human experience.
And many of them at a very young age. I grew up around classical music, so it is just really, it's the thing that brings me closest to my memory of my father. I mean, because this is what I grew up with. Every Sunday night, listening to the Boston Pops with him, there was music always played in the house, and he played French horn. And it was just, it's such a unbelievable part of my life, and classical music. And then I hear things on the radio, and it's like, I remember hearing that when I was so tiny, probably in utero, you know, like, I mean, I just remember all these things. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do? You've taken your education, and what are you doing now with conducting? How is that being expressed in the real world? Where are you expressing yourself as a conductor, and what other kinds of things are you doing? Because I know you're also involved in the business part of this, because you are very diverse in terms of what you're doing in your business.
Yeah, conducting is a big part of my life, of course. I conduct two orchestras in Denver, the Aurora Symphony and the Denver Rock Orchestra. And in both of those groups, I like to come at it from not just a conducting side, but actually as a leadership side on the podium and off the podium. I am the marketing director for the Fort Collins Symphony as well. That's not quite my day job, but it's kind of a part-time thing in the sense that I'm able to do half music and half administration, half marketing, half business, which is really unique for conductors, especially because we like to focus on the music. And so with that experience, with that opportunity, I am able to kind of see the other side and see where we can grow and see what we can do better. So my big push is that that orchestras and conductors and leaders can be business leaders, and they should be just as much as the people that are not playing on the stage. Because there's so much potential, there's so much we can learn from business, but we tend to like to sit in that kind of behind the scenes and just let other people do it. But there's so much potential if you can run an organization right, if you can market it right, if you can understand that that music is this really unique thing and that it does change people in a way. It is a service that we offer that you cannot get anywhere else. So the business side is really important to me to keep our art alive. It's not gonna stay alive if we keep doing it the same way for the past 200 or 300 years. We saw in the past couple of decades that's not gonna work.
Yeah, absolutely, because I mean, a lot of orchestras have gone away, even in my own area, where we used to have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people on Sunday nights. That orchestra is gone now. Things are changing, and that means we have to change with the times. And you know what's really interesting is being a leader as an entrepreneur, you are maestro, right? Mm-hmm. And you're just taking transferable skills and you're going across it's the same thing, right? Leadership, mm-hmm. leadership. And that kind of brings me to something else you're doing. And I'd love to talk a little bit more about this and unpack it, is you are also a coach. You coach conductors, yep. and other people around mindset and productivity and things like that. Let's talk about that. When did you start I know you've been coaching all along, because essentially being a conductor is about coaching always. But why is it that you wanted to add coaching in a more formal way to your business? What was it that prompted you to want to, do this in a more formal way and put yourself out there now also as a coach?
The biggest thing was there's so much potential for what we do to make a change in society, but also to be sustainable. All orchestras basically have to be nonprofits because we have high expenses, and we tend to have a tough time with income and ticket sales. I've been coaching. I've been teaching private lessons, which is coaching in its own right. Mm-hmm. I started a podcast for conductors in 2017. Because I moved to Colorado, and my friend and I, we used to meet at Starbucks every week and study together. And we couldn't do that anymore when I moved. So we started meeting online every week. And then we said, well, why don't we start recording these? So we started a podcast in 2017. We're at over 100 episodes now. And basically we're interviewing conductors. And my whole goal with that was to, one, just for myself, to practice creating something. I wanted to start something in an entrepreneurial way. Mm-hmm. But then also to learn from these conductors, and have an excuse to get them on the phone and learn from them, and then share it with other conductors. As conductors, we literally have a podium to have a voice in the community. We are community leaders. There are 50 or 60 local musicians that we work with every week or every month, whatever the rehearsal structure is for your particular orchestra. So for years, I've been trying to teach conductors how to be better conductors and how to be better community leaders. There was always that aspect, because you can only talk about music so much on a podcast unless you're actually getting into it. But what we were able to talk about a lot is, like, how do you grow an orchestra? How do you talk to the audience? How do you program a season so that it's interesting and it's artistic and it sells well? So I've been doing this specifically for conductors for so many years. And now that I've also been working in admin and marketing for 4 years now, 6 years now, excuse me, I kind of said, well, you know, I've seen results. Clearly these things are working. And now I can start like actually, you know, helping this grow, helping conductors one-on-one with leadership skills instead of one to many, like I've been doing through the podcast. And so that I saw that as a really an opportunity with a lot of blue ocean for being able to make a difference in the world, being able to promote our art and make sure that it's done well. Because there's a big problem that our art is great. It's the way that we do it and the way that we package it that that is where it kind of falls flat a lot of the time. So if I can teach the leaders to lead well, if I can teach the leaders to grow their orchestras, to talk to the audience in a way that's really welcoming, to position their concerts as not just a concert, but actually an experience that people go to have, then I can make a big difference in the world, help people do what they do better, see more funds to create more interesting projects, not always be struggling for money like our art historically has been.
You know, just the fact that you went and started a podcast about conducting for conductors, you know, talking to conductors, I think that is just so fantastic. What a unique niche when it comes to entrepreneurship, and what an amazing thing to have a resource like that, because other conductors don't get opportunities to hear what other conductors think. Nobody has time, right? And to bring something like this to your community, I mean, wow, talk about leadership and being out in the forefront of doing something fascinating, which I think is absolutely fascinating. And, you know, it's interesting what you say about, you know, they have to communicate differently. They have to connect differently because we got to keep classical music alive. We got to keep this industry alive. We had a fantastic conductor here. I don't know if you ever got a chance to talk to him. He's since passed away. His name was Charles Greenwell, and he used to lead our Birmingham Bloomfield Symphony Orchestra. Fantastic, incredible background. And he used to he was such a good storyteller. And before each piece would be played, he would give us the story behind the music and include amazing little anecdotes about maybe how it was written or an affair somebody was having, which inspired them to write the piece, whatever it was always beautiful. And it was hypnotic because he was very good with hypnotic language, and stories, of course, are hypnotic. It was so amazing. Half the time we just wanted to go there just to listen to his stories because they were so captivating, and they taught people about the music because it's not just about listening. It's what's the story behind it. What was the inspiration? What was, you know, there could have been an event that was inspired from it or inspired. It was the inspiration for. So there's just so much about that. And his ability to connect with the audience was unbelievable. But, you know, it's too bad that he's gone now. He died, unfortunately, in 2020. But he changed. He was the reason that place was packed and the tickets would sell out. He was that reason. And when he went away, it pretty much went away. And we no longer have the symphony orchestra, but there would be like over 1,000 people there at every performance. I kid you not. It was unbelievable.
I'd love to hear that. Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing. Local community orchestra serving Bloomfield, Beverly Hills, you know, our the Bees where we're at right now. So I love what you're doing. It's so important. And what are the kinds of things that you're working on with folks when you're in this coaching? So what are some of the big issues with conductors? Because we all have our headset problems, right? Our mindset problems. What are some of the big issues that you see with conductors today?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, like I said earlier, all this great music was written by humans who are having human experiences, who are having affairs, who are, you know, struggling with their own mortality. So, yeah, it's very much alive. The biggest thing that I see is kind of a resistance to the concept of good business practices and best practices, and the idea that the music can speak for itself. And the music can speak for itself once you get people into the hall.
Right.
I think, again, our art is so great. All we have to do is get out of the way for it. So the biggest thing I work on is that mindset of, yes, the music speaks for itself. Yes, that was a great concert. but not enough people saw it. So they don't know that they enjoyed it. So they don't know to come back. So, and just the idea that not everybody knows as much as we do about what we do, which is quite a concept that, you know, nobody knows as much about or loves what we do as much as we do. So I like to break it out into outsiders, which is most people. Most people don't know jargon, don't know some of the names. Then there are casual insiders. There are people who kind of know what they want. They go regularly. And these are the people that you attract with the title of the piece or the big hits. And then there's the hardcore insiders, which is us, the people who play it, the people who know the music theory, who see a piece on a program and go to it. But the problem is that we only ever think about marketing or appealing to the hardcore insiders because that's who we are. Everybody right. in the orchestra, the conductor, we have a really hard time seeing the perspective of normal people, of casual insiders, and especially outsiders, because so many orchestra posters and programs and advertisements is just a list of the pieces we play. Mm-hmm. And that's fine if you're only needing to, you know, attract a very small number of people who know that insider language and know what those names mean. But mm-hmm. most people are not there. So the first thing I do is I get them to just understand that concept, that most people see the name of a composer, Shostakovich. And if you're an insider, you will probably recognize that. And if I see a Shostakovich symphony on a concert, I'm definitely going to go. Most people don't know that name, but he has this incredible story. He was a Soviet composer, basically being used by the Soviet Union. And after he wrote one of his symphonies that was in a little bit of defiance, he would literally sleep in the stairwell outside his house so that if they came and took him in the night, he wouldn't wake up his family. So he was literally waiting. So he's got this beautiful story. And if we can understand that people don't know that name, but they can relate to that story, mm-hmm. or if we can put something on the concert that people do recognize, anytime we do something from a movie, which is very often, a lot of classical music is used in movies, I always make a point to say, you might know it from this movie. You don't know the name. If you heard it, you would recognize it, but we can't usually do that in advertisements or programs or posters. But if you can say, oh, we're doing the Beautiful Blue Danube, which you probably know from 2001, A Space Odyssey, now people right. have a way to connect it. But the average outsider doesn't know. And that's 99% of people walking around on the street. So that mindset shift of we do need to grow. And then most people don't know nearly as much as we do. And so we need to meet them where they are. And that's why I talk about talking and how to talk to the audience and don't start everything with, as we all know, you know, Beethoven did this, because most people don't know that.
Right.
Yeah. Most people don't know. We know, the conductors know that when we do Beethoven's Third Symphony, he had written basically a suicide note and then said, no, I can't leave this earth. I have too much music. He was going deaf at this time and he was really questioning his life. So we know that. But when you say the words Heiligenstadt Testament, the average person on the street does not know what that means. So we have to tell the story. We just have to meet them where they are. People understand the significance of that event, but they don't know it if we don't tell them. So not saying, as we all know, not saying, oh, the Heiligenstadt Testament, but talking about Beethoven's quasi-suicide note that he wrote. And then we found years later after his death, I believe. So those are the two big things, that just that mindset and then understanding the perspective of the average person and how to talk to them.
I think those are amazing points. And those are exactly what that one conductor I was speaking about would do between pieces. I mean, I've been to many, I'm sure you've been to thousands of them over your life, performances where they just go from piece to piece to piece with just yep. a little silence in between and a few taps.
It's just, and in that way, like, it's just about the music. It's not right. about the story right. or the experience. That's an insider concert. And that's the big thing I'm pushing against is is give
It
people
makes such a
context.
difference. And even little tidbits, even in between, like, why do we have, the percussion over here? Why do we have this over there? Like, and what are, what do we call the baton? What are the pieces of the baton? What are they made out of? Where do we get them? You know, like anything like that just like draws people in, like, wow, because people love those little bits of trivia, so to speak. And it just makes it a full, like, educational experience for everybody. But yeah, I love it that this is what you're doing. I think it's fantastic. So I know, gosh, I had so many more questions, but I know we only have a few minutes, but we'll still keep going as long as we can. What is it that, what is it done for you to, like, what is it doing for you as an entrepreneur? Because you're in many different things that you're doing right now. You got the podcast, which is amazing. You've got, you also have a newsletter. What is it about this experience that you're going through? What is it doing for you? What kind of things have changed in you over the past couple of years in terms of your own leadership or your mindset? What's been the change inside of you? Because you're doing all these things and you're succeeding at all of them.
It's helped me, put words to the things that we've been doing that have been making sense. And then it also just helps me reach more people and know, when I'm in a hall, there's applause coming back. When I'm sending out my newsletter or when I'm recording a podcast episode, I hear, there's crickets. There's nothing coming on the other side. Sometimes we'll get a comment here or there. And on the amazing off chance that I meet somebody in person, this one time I was at a workshop and this person started saying, have you heard of the podcast Podium Time? It's fantastic. And I said, no, I haven't. Tell me more about it. that was one of my proudest moments. So being able to expand that, because I can make that difference in my city with the three orchestras that I work directly with. But if I can send that out, it's hard because I don't get that feedback, but I see the download numbers. I see the number of people that save like a reel on Instagram and open and click on links in the emails. And I know that they're then taking that and, expanding it and just letting the ripples get bigger and bigger. Cause then hopefully they'll go off and teach other people that as well.
Jeremy, I have to ask you this, but do you have a book out yet? Do you have anything? Because, I mean, this is the next logical step if you don't already have this. I mean, you have the newsletter, but you can repurpose those newsletters into a nice little book or, I would make it a series, like performances have season tickets. I would create a series around something you're doing in this because I think it could be very helpful to fully, build out the portfolio.
We have talked about taking the podcast episodes and transcribing them into a book. There are actually a couple books of just interviews with conductors that that we could use. So we've definitely thought about that. I don't have any plans right now. I'm still writing. I'm still exploring. I'm still teaching.
And you have a lot going on. You're a busy person.
On top of the performances that I'm conducting.
And if you, what kind of, I know we only have about a minute before I get a close, but what tool do you use to keep track of everything? Is everything in a Google Calendar, or how do you keep all this going? Because I mean, you have to travel a lot for what you do. It's in person. It's not on online, folks, except for the podcast. But how do you keep it all going so that you keep the empire growing?
Yeah, my calendar, definitely. I write down everything. I have notebooks all over the place, so nothing's kept in my head. And then if it's a concert week, I let things slide a little bit. So I will actually, I will not go 100% on everything all the time. If it's concert week, I don't check my email for a couple of days because I have something more important that I need to focus on. So I balance that. I try to balance that really well. So I'm never getting overloaded and I can always focus on the one thing at a time. That's maybe my biggest challenge is I have four or five things and I need to focus on only one thing at a time to make that forward momentum.
I understand that. Well, I have one final question to ask you before we wrap up, and I'd certainly love to interview you again in the future because there's so much more here I'd love to talk about from the business standpoint of being a conductor. But what is your piece of advice? What's one piece of advice you'd like to share with entrepreneurs since you've been in this and you're going to be in it for a long time to come? What's a piece of advice you'd share to help others who are perhaps entrepreneurs in the music end of things?
Entrepreneurs on the music end of things, the advice I was going to give is to have that seasonality, have that break.
Yeah.
Know yourself when you can go pedal to the metal and when you have that space and when you need to pull back a little bit. I've had to learn that the hard way, having so many things. But I think that applies to people in the music business and people not in. Just have that seasonality of, yeah, this is a busy week and it's okay if I don't get everything done. I need to take some rest time, because the levels of burnout in entrepreneurs and musicians are both very high. It's, I mean, maybe everybody today, but I know those two are very high.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Jeremy, this has been an amazing time with you. Thank you so much for being a guest on the program today. Jeremy Cuevas, thank you again.
Thank you so much, Tara.
Absolutely. If you'd like more information about our program, please visit us at www.michiganentrepreneurtv.com. Please join me again in the future when I interview another enterprising entrepreneur. Until then, wishing you the best of business.